Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, where we goof off and eat candy. I'm your host, bazillionaire Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of the critic. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Michael Raparez, and I carry buttered biscuits in my pants.
Who doesn't? Who else?
I'm Diana Goodman. I want to put Merle Haggard on the Supreme Court.
He'd be a better choice than a few people. And who else?
Henry Gilbert. And if you'll excuse me, I have to go put on some leather and go get spanked.
Great reading. And today's episode is All the Duke's Men.
I say gaze into the hypnotic power of my evil eye.
And today's episode aired on April 23rd, 1995. And as always, Henry will tell us what movies were out at this point in history.
Buy my buck. Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! Leo DiCaprio and Marky Mark get gritty in the biographical Basketball Diaries. David Caruso and Nick Cage lead the noir remake Kiss of Death! And Sandra Bullock steals the hearts of the unconscious Peter Gallagher and the conscious Bill Pullman in While You Were Sleeping. Yes.
Only one of those movies anyone cares about in any way.
I've actually seen them all. Basketball Diaries, it is such an after-school special, but yeah. When I was a kid, I was like, this is what the streets are really like, man. Oh, man, this is so awesome. But though it's weird to watch it now and think of the similarities to Marky Mark actually beating a man horribly in real life.
Yeah, this was the rise to power of Sandy B. She was also in The Nets and previously in Speed. So really making the most of her career.
While You Were Sleeping made her a rom-com superstar. And I liked this film. She was funny as the goofy lady in it. And my favorite bit in it is when... So Peter Gallagher is in a coma, and she tricks his family into thinking they are engaged, even though she's really kind of a stalker of him instead.
Yeah, she plays quirky stalkers a lot in romantic comedies.
And so one of the points where she's able to prove to them that she really is his fiancé is that she says she finds out that due to a freak basketball accident, Peter Gallagher's character had lost a testicle. And so she says he's incomplete. And the mom touches his balls to confirm, while he's in a coma, to confirm he has only one ball.
Oh, boy.
She says, like, I'm the mother. I changed his diaper. I'm going to find out. And yes,
there's doctors nearby.
They could have just asked, they could have just asked the doctor, like, hey, he's got only one ball, right? But
so you're saying it's aged very well.
Yes. And then meanwhile, Kiss of Death.
Kiss of Death.
It was part of like three movies where David Caruso's like, I'm a movie star now, right? And everybody said, no, you are not.
Yeah, the classic South Park line, do your impression of David Caruso's career, which they played a lot before that first episode aired. It was like, this is a hoot.
Yeah, and the Kiss of Death was such an easy joke, too, of like, oh, what's his career? He made Kiss of Death. That's David Caruso's film career.
It's no right. Jade. Was that another movie he did?
Yes, Jade was actually much worse.
Sexy movies with a sexy redhead.
Had an extra girlfriend who loved that movie.
Oh, wow.
And he was
we hit a nerve with Diana. I won't say the J word anymore, I swear.
No, it's just, it was so bad, and I was in film school in San Francisco at the time, and William Friedkin, the director, a fine director, came and spoke to our class, and we all had to be like, don't ask about Jade. Like, no one say anything about the movie he's promoting. Let's just ask about, like, Exorcist and French Connection and Sorcerer. Mm. Because we had a screening and we were all like, oh, you've got to be fucking kidding me. This guy's coming? Oh, God. bad. It's bad.
That sounds awful. So this episode opens with, I think, the most tortured film parody in The Critic. So it is like 19 different things. It's Rain Man. It's Risky Business. It's A Few Good Men. It's Universal Monsters.
Interview with a Vampire.
Interview with a Vampire as well. It's just like pick a movie. Okay. And Risky Business is off the table. Rain Man is off the table. You've done too much. A Few Good Men is not – it's only referenced in the title. But come on, guys. Come on. Yeah. We've all had fun with A Few Good Men. It's over.
They've done them all. Well, I will say this episode is written by Patrick Verone, who would go on to be be a fixture of Futurama, which I there is a very clear proto-Futurama joke in this episode. Actually,
oh, yeah, there is.
It was, I mean, it was the opening sound. The evil eye is Hypnotoad.
It really is. It really is.
Might be my favorite Charles Napier line ever.
Yes. Yeah. But this episode, I'll just address the elephant in the room now. It is impossible to watch this episode without thinking of Donald Trump.
Yes.
Multiple people on YouTube cut together just the Duke scenes of this saying, this is Donald Trump's campaign, except Duke loses. That is the one difference. Well, there's a couple differences.
Yeah, in the 90s, it was too crazy to think that Donald Trump could ever be president. It was funny to look at another rich businessman who, instead of becoming president, he failed miserably and he had a crazy running mate. So.
Yes, yeah. And that was Ross Perot, which is what this is. But anyway, yes, Rain Man jokes. I'm so fucking sick of them.
I'm an excellent flyer.
Oh, gotta watch Monsters. And then he says, should have flown Qantas, which makes no fucking sense.
Okay. I can weigh in here.
Please.
This is a joke directly from the film Rain Man. They're driving across country because Raymond, Dustin Hoffman's character, refuses to fly because he starts citing lots and lots of statistics about crashes. And the only airline that hasn't crashed is Qantas.
I hate Qantas.
And so, Tom Cruise is like, how much did they pay for that placement? I don't know, but Tom Cruise is like, we're not flying to Australia, so we can't fly Qantas. That scene was not shown on airline versions.
And unfortunately, Marty gets a B plot in this episode, but it's paired up against a Duke plot, which you could never compete with that. And again, it's a very, like, Marty is sad. Marty sucks. Marty can't do anything.
It's a really short plot.
It really is.
It is over real fast.
I feel like they transplanted the finale of his plot from Act 3 to Act 2 because they're just like, nobody fucking cares.
Yeah.
Let's get this over with.
There are no stakes when Marty's involved. But here is Jay trying to figure out a way to sell Marty.
Now, Marty, when you run for president, you've got to sell yourself. What makes you stand out from the other kids?
I ate my dissected frog.
That's my boy. I once ate the sheep from a nativity scene. I don't think that'll get you many votes.
I don't know what to tell you, Dad. I'm just an average kid.
That's your angle. You're the average kid. The kid of the people. Why, they'll lap it up like cheap booze at Drew Barrymore's Sweet 16 party.
Ouch.
Yeah, I mean, it's established now that both Jay and Marty eat lab animals.
That's the Marty we should see. Instead of just being the unpopular lame-o, it should be him doing gross things.
Yeah, like eating a scented candle.
Just make him the food monster. I feel like all his food monster jokes are after the fact. They never animate him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be too disturbing. Like, this is a tragic child.
The only time that they did was when he lost all the weight and let's have him run in and, oh no, all this, our freezer's failed.
I mean, eating a dissected frog is much more like Ralph. Like, that's a Ralph thing than the dork that Marty is supposed to be. He's just supposed to be like a sweater-wearing nice boy.
Yeah.
I feel like
he's a soft boy.
Dissected frog's even worse than that raw fish that Jay ate.
Yes.
Because it's all like formaldehyde.
No, it would poison you. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yes.
I hated dissecting frogs. It's gross.
It's one of those things I looked forward to my whole life, and then when I actually did it, it's like, oh God, I can't do this.
It's like, these organs are all the same color. Those charts lied to me. It's all just a gray mess in here.
The jock kids have all cut their frogs in half and are using them like puppets to talk.
Find the future serial killers in that room. Doris paints I heart farm animals on Jay's bald head. I want to say they probably had a much dirtier thing they wanted to put on Jay's head, but just saying I love farm animals doesn't really – I don't immediately think of sex.
Well, with the heart especially, I guess, you know, you can imply he has sex with animals. Like, that's a joke. That's the joke. I love that.
So here is Marty's speech, I think written by Jay.
Hi, I'm Marty Sherman. I'm not royalty like my friend Faisal. And I can't offer you a vacation in the South Pacific like my Easter Island friend. I can't do those things because I'm just a regular kid. I'm the regular kid candidate.
Hmm.
If I'm elected, I'll work hard and build the best homecoming float ever. Vote for me, the regular kid.
Yay!
El Niño Normal! Tu boca. Cha.
Yay!
Pugnar.
Crisscross. Marty! Marty! Marty!
I enjoy the addition of Klingons to the UN school.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
For my research, that is not real Klingon words.
It's pretty short.
Yeah.
It's like Krish Krosh, right?
Yeah. Apparently, in an episode of Deep Space Nine, there was the term Krish Nosh, which is let's go, which could kind of fit there. But I also – they had so,
I feel bad. Easter Island Kid doesn't get a name.
I have a theory about this now. Okay. It's like, well, either they don't use names on Easter Island or the Easter Island Kid is just – a new kid every time because he always falls and smashes his stone head.
We never see the repairing process of that. I think they just die.
They all die
and they're replaced by another one.
It's the same Easter Island joke every time, but it's funny. It's
like my friend from Easter Island, I don't want to give him a name because then I'll get attached.
Now, as dull as Marty is, I love El Niño Normale.
And the cut to
I think proper Spanish would just be normal.
Yes, that's true.
But he's got the fist for it. Yeah.
He's learning.
And the cut to the two kids who look just like him. I was like, oh, that's funny. I looked this up because Faisal seems so specific for a name of a Saudi prince that actually there are two very famous Faisals in Saudi history. In 1975, the then king of Saudi Arabia, King Faisal bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, he was assassinated by Prince Faisal bin Musad in 1975. They were having like a private meeting, and when he was supposed to like kiss him on the cheek or whatever the presentation would be, Faisal the younger pulled out a gun and shot him in the face.
I was hoping for a knife. It's more theatrical.
And he was, well, he was taken down by a knife but not killed. And then he was publicly executed by beheading just a month later because it really was an open and shut case. But so that is probably why every reference on the show is to the 70s. So that's probably why when they think, well, what's the name of a Saudi prince or a Saudi royalty? Faisal.
But how about those crazy 90s camcorders, everyone? Am I right? There's so many buttons. Who could even figure them out?
And it's just like those airline peanuts. It's impossible. They also had to shove in a Dukakis joke just because Lovitz can do that voice. They just got to do it.
Oh, man, though. I really want I'm so bummed that we're like at the end of this show because the Klingons, I think, would have been a really nice addition. I love the little Klingon girls got glasses and little boys got braces and headgear.
You're right. Yeah. In a season three, they would have been the new Easter Island kid. They'd appear in every school scene for Marty. I miss that.
Yes. Also, I can't help but look at this with modern eyes and say like, oh, so you're the white brown-haired kid, so you're normal. You're the regular kid.
White men are the default, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, he is Jewish.
That's true.
At least half Jewish.
Ethnically, if not in practice.
Well, though his mother, I guess, isn't Jewish.
We
don't know. That's true.
That's true.
This was the episode I discovered that in most episodes, Alice's job is to compliment Jay, which
she's really underused after the first episode.
In function, it makes her Her job is to make Jay more likable by complimenting him constantly. So instead of just having everyone in season one say Jay is ugly and unpopular, you have one character saying, like, you can do it, Jay. I know you can.
Yeah, it's a little annoying that in episode one of the second season, they introduce a skill for her. She's a good painter. She's a good artist. But that never comes up ever, ever, ever. And it could be the source of many a plot to take down the art world.
Yeah, they really should have done more with that.
But Duke watches Marty's speech and he gets the idea to run for president.
I've made up my mind. I'm going to run for president.
But you're not a politician. You're a businessman.
All the better. I made a multinational media conglomerate out of a humble fried chicken franchise.
I'd like a number 7 extra crispy.
Cornbread or hot buttered biscuit?
biscuit.
You carry buttered biscuits in your pants?
Yes. Oh, you're talking to him?
So yes, running the country like a business, bad idea.
Yes, I always go for hot butter biscuit over cornbread at fried chicken places as well. I prefer that. I like the fluffiness of it. And my favorite fast food biscuit is the KFC one.
How about the Red Lobster biscuits, man?
Oh, those are the best. Yeah. Yes, the Cheddar Bay biscuits.
I would murder a man for one of those right now.
And I also love that in Duke's head – not angel and devil, but money man on a throne of gold and devil.
And, devil.
And he wants to put Merle Haggard on the Supreme Court.
And drop a whole mess of bombs, which is really what every president do. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you will drop a lot of bombs on people and then say, whoops, oh.
We do learn in this episode that Duke already has nuclear weapons. And in the past, didn't he give Harry missiles to celebrities?
He had to give tomahawk missiles to everybody, even Saddam. You know, I don't get Saddam Hussein to play himself. And I also like these subtle class joke that Duke sees the average guy as someone who makes $300,000 a year. I love that.
He is a billionaire, so that must seem like a very small amount of money.
Doris immediately exploits.
Yeah. And then goes to a non-smoking tropical island, which it's like, come on, you can smoke there.
Up next, there's a scene of Duke and Jay in a sauna. And Duke is doing one-arm push-ups a la Jack Palance at the 91 Oscars. This is unfair to Jack Palance, but I looked up a clip of that. And he's really kind of faking his way through those push-ups. Like, I mean, you are like a mummy man. And I appreciate the attempt. But they weren't as impressive as I thought they were, one-arm push-ups.
Jeremy finally gets to do something again, though, at least to have a bunch of Harvard-y smarty pants jokes about James Monroe, which I did do some research for.
Oh, right.
So first off, the Monroe Doctrine was actually about resisting European colonization in any areas of the Americas. It was not to though I guess him beating up foreign agents as Monroe does in the movie is true. Like, it's sort of about stopping colonization.
No, it's us calling dibs on the entire hemisphere.
Yeah, it's ours to colonize, man. Yep. And then second, the era of good feelings refers to the post-war of 1812 era that Monroe oversaw, where people like, can we have unity again? We just lost a war. Like, let's just have a nice time.
Well, Henry, it'll last up to 50 years.
Well, Henry, you say this is a good chance for Jeremy to shine, but really it's inexplicably Jeremy doing an impression during a movie. Like, we've seen this several times where it's like they let me do my
Kirk Douglas
impression. He just is always doing impressions. He's always doing like Johnny Carson. So in this one, it's such a weird parody. He is doing Sean Connery's Bond, but as Monroe, James Monroe. Let's hear it.
Who are you?
My name is Monroe, James Monroe. And here's a taste of the Monroe Doctrine. Welcome to the era of good feelings.
Oh, James.
That actually happened.
Yeah. That music sting that's just barely not Goldfinger. That's really good sound-alike music.
You can't sue over it. It's so good.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I got these out of order. I forgot the steam room thing was before this.
Yeah. Kind of a bad gay joke. I mean, I'm sure all gay men, when they find out someone else is gay, they immediately try to seduce them. I mean.
Totally. And have public sex in a steam room.
Yeah. But he does mention that, Jay could have any job in the government that he wants, except in the army, because they don't take as kindly to his kind.
Yeah.
Because this was pre-gays in the military.
Yeah. Well, don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask, don't tell. Now Obama ended it, and they really, you can't bring it back. It's one of those things. Like, once it's gone, it's like marriage equality. It's really hard to undo it. Once people are used to it and see.
You can try.
Once people see it did not ruin the family by happening, then we can just keep doing it.
So up next, last episode we got a great dig at Tim Allen, and we get another one in this episode.
Damn,
and man, they love making fun of his criminal past.
Listen, honey, I've known men like Duke all my life. There was this one boy back in college, dealt drugs, went to jail, yet today he's the star of Home Improvement. And I think with you behind him, Duke could accomplish great things, too.
Well, thanks, but maybe I should think about this some more.
Don't listen to this. Listen to this.
You want me to listen to my stomach?
No, silly. Your heart.
No one ever listens to me. Boo-hoo.
I love it. We missed Marty. He loses all of his bass because he tells them they have to work, and they immediately flee.
No Mondale joke there. Could have been a good Mondale joke where he's like, I promised to raise taxes. We got to do this. I'm sorry, guys. He got his ass kicked for it.
I do like the Klingon mom beams them back in to say thank you for the pizza. Thank you for the pizza.
I love the way they say that. Thank you for the pizza, Mr. Sherman.
I like that bit of just like, even though they're Klingons, they still like the mom's like, you didn't say thank you. Come on, proper manners.
And we see the return of Duke's private amusement park, Phillips Land in New Jersey. And we see another thing that Al Jean and Mike Reese love, Hall of Presidents jokes.
Oh, good.
So here it is.
Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for Duke Phillips.
You made him say that.
You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you'll never fool good old Duke Phillips.
Huh?
I'm Bill Clinton. I urge you to work for Duke Phillips.
It's not Clinton. That's just one of your mechanical hillbilly bears.
Yeah, but so far nobody's noticed.
That's right. So episode one, we saw the hillbilly bears. In the airing of this, this was the next episode to air. So two hillbilly bears in a row.
I love that. So in real world, the real Hall of Presidents is currently shut down because some asshole won't record new stuff for it. But
it's he's too busy, Henry.
Well, it's so...
There's so much recording of him, you can just edit it together to make him say anything. Unfortunately, anything he says is going to sound entirely plausible because of all the dumb things the president has said.
He said every dumb thing.
So in the history of Disney's Hall of Presidents, at the very least, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Obama recorded original statements for their president robot to say.
Neat.
And they were all very centristy, like America's the greatest, blah, blah, whatever. Who cares? Yeah. And I remember the only time I've been to Hall of Presidents was when I had to hear Bush talk. And I was like, I was really grumbling. But so they want to get current president to record it. But they can't. They apparently are disagreeing on what he is supposed to say or how his robot will look or all these things. And so they don't want to release it without – they can't do it without his recording. And they want an original recording from him. But I wonder if he's mad that he'd have to do it for free. But
it could be it.
But it's this behind-the-scenes thing. As Disney's only statement on it is just like, we're still updating it, still working on it. And they just have a sign outside like, still preparing our new president. So Hall of Presidents, you just can't go to
I think
it.
He's just like, no, you have to make it fatter. I have to be honest.
No, I want to see the all-nude Nixon review.
Yes. Oh, boy. Several nude Nixon robots.
As I have pointed out before, Disneyland is right down the street from the Nixon Presidential Library and Burial Site.
Mm.
And they advertise in local papers of minutes from Disneyland because you can do both in the same day.
Well, why wouldn't you? They're both so exciting.
Mm-hmm. And the JFK act break is pretty cliche, but I do like that it ends on the hard iris.
Yeah,
like,
the Love American style hard iris.
Yep. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, I like that they didn't make it like a J. Edgar Hoover joke with the dress that he builds a Marilyn Monroe out of John Quincy Adams and Herbert Hoover. Which is like, neither of those is especially sexy. I don't know where you got the blonde hair.
They had to reshape a lot of metal.
Yeah. Man, I mean, he put some effort in. Good for him.
JFK's robot is quite an inventor. Like, they need to shut that down. Yeah. He's an AI who can build other robots. Like,
oh, my God.
He's going to take over.
Shit.
Skynet's happening. And we get more Tom Snyder mockery. Go back to a song for Margot. We explain who Tom Snyder is and why it's funny that he's old and boring.
But he keeps cool and cooling.
I think he's not that old, but
no,
he's close enough.
Not. He was born 7 years after Coolidge was out of office.
Oh, okay. So he should have kept Hoove with Hoover?
I guess. Yeah.
Well, and
1936 he was born.
Oh, okay. So he should have kept Roose with Roosevelt.
And kept Svelte with Roosevelt.
Duke's,
better.
And then Duke's reasoning is exactly what Perot and Trump said of like, you can't bribe me because I'm rich, no special interest, which was total bullshit. Like, it is easy to bribe him. He is just doing the GOP thing.
Well,
like,
he immediately turns this into an opportunity to merchandise. Like, people call about his campaign and he tries to sell him the 12-volume history of pressed meat. Which I didn't know you had a publishing division.
It's a very Time Life Books joke because they would always do like 12 volumes of this. The first volume is free for 30 days. I imagine returning it was such a pain in the ass, you would just commit to the entire series.
Yep.
Yeah.
I also
remember Duke has his own detergent as well. Like, so he has anything, which is just box.
Well, he has a child publishing wing. We know that Fat Little Piggy.
That's
so
true.
I guess he also has a Time Life subscription style.
And I love that Jay is just eating the book cover like a billy goat. He's just like, he pauses for a second like, no, just eats it.
There's a kind of odd and a bit bad joke about tarring and feathering Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
They really hate Schwarzenegger on The Critic, and I think he's made some fun movies. I just don't know why they just hated him specifically.
I feel like Jim Belushi would have been so much of a better target.
Or just Stallone. Like, they pick on Stallone almost
every
episode.
I think Schwarzenegger's pretty likable, though, even in bad movies.
Also, in 1995, I do not believe that there would be a bipartisan agreement to tar and feather Arnold Schwarzenegger to put it through Congress because he was such a Republican celebrity. The Republicans would have never voted for it. And as everyone knows, they control both the House and the Senate post 1994, the Republican Revolution.
This is a pre-governator era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but he still was the famous Republican when they said, like, well, who's the famous Republican? Arnold Schwarzenegger. He is.
So we see what they're referencing directly in this episode where I wonder what happened to Ross Perot. He's in they're delivering Domino's pizza with was Admiral Stockdale. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we hear gridlock, which is one of the crazy things he shouted at his speech or whatever.
He was a very confused old man.
Yeah.
It was old way of thinking. He's like, well, I need a war hero. Like, people don't want to think about Vietnam.
So you don't want an unhinged straight shooter who doesn't realize he's not shooting straight.
Them in the car together reminds me of the classic SNL sketch of Ross Perot driving Stockdale out in the middle of nowhere and throwing a stick out to leave him like he's a dog.
Stockdale was Phil Hartman, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
So, he was so fucking good.
Stay tuned to Fox, where we can say boobies.
Watch Fox every Saturday. Power Rangers lead the way. Look out, that guy's your best and stray. Come and see what that away. Don't miss Animaniacs. So crazy, you can't hold them back. Extravaganza, so jam-packed. Party with some real cool cats. Spider-Man's a clinging, clinging, swinging superhero through and through. Then it takes a kicky, slick, every good guy who is true blue. Even fights crime when he's down with the flu. The X-Men are hard to resist. Batman and Robin top the list. Be sure to open your eyelids Saturday morning on Fox Kids.
Duke Phillips meets Bob Dole.
Bob Dole, good to meet you, Duke.
I'm Dan Quayle. I gotta go boom boom.
Bob, I'm thinking of running as a Republican.
That nomination is mine. If you interfere, I'll release this tape.
Pretty kitty calico, you know that I love you so. With your fur so soft and fair, I will get you everywhere.
All right, I'll run as an independent.
I love how he just starts crying during that song. He's so moved. He's so moved by the cat.
Why would he videotape that?
I don't know.
That's a good question. But we know he goes to the Cat Fancy Con or something like that. He's been a fan of cats. It's come up a couple times.
No, in 2017, that cat video would get memeified and it'd make him more popular.
Mm. Also, I can't imagine Bob Dole thinking like you running as a third party is better than you taking the Republican nomination, because now it's like, well, if a third party aligns with another party, it's going to split the vote and the other party's probably going to win.
And clearly he is a Republican more than it is. I like that he chose a side. He's like, well, yeah, I'm going to run as a Republican.
He's not going to even try to run as Democrat or deal with Clinton or whatever.
And that's unfortunate, though. In the real world, Trump was able to usurp the GOP party and run as a Republican effectively.
Just by breaking the rules, being like, your wife's ugly, you're a coward. Yeah.
You're all losers, which they were. It was funny at first to see him make fun of Jeb. I laughed as hard as anybody.
Yeah, Jeb with his mom was just like Principal Skinner and his mom.
Well, meanwhile, Bob Dole beats such wonderful candidates easily as Pat Buchanan, Steve Forbes, and Alan Keyes. Remember Alan Keyes?
Yes,
he was the – before Herman Cain, he was the black guy of the Republicans. Who he unsuccessfully ran against a young man named Barack Obama in 2004 Illinois Senate. That was the last anybody heard of Alan Keyes. Well, no, he became like a Fox News guy, as happens to all of them.
They usually do. So Marty is having his own problems.
I don't know, son, but you've got to try. It's what you promised the other kids.
But all they want to do is goof off and eat candy.
Well, son, as president, you're above that.
I do solemnly swear that as your president, I will goof off and eat candy.
Four more years.
I like how mean that joke is.
Quite mean. I love that. And the eating candy, he was a Jelly Bean fan, in case you didn't know. As somebody who has taken the tour of the Jelly Belly factory, there is basically a multiple tributes to Reagan in there because they're like, he made him so popular and he, because he stopped smoking a pipe and ate jelly beans for placing.
Okay. That was
a story.
I didn't realize that.
So he brought jelly beans into the Oval Office and they, they have literally a mosaic of jelly beans of Reagan.
That sounds disgusting.
As a tribute to him.
That sounds gross.
Well, I think they think it's an apolitical statement to have it there because it's like, well, he is a California icon and you're in the California factory.
He was a president.
And and I think of each of those beans in the mosaic as a different person who died of AIDS. Oh,
Jesus. That's a great way to look at it.
There's a jelly belly AIDS quilt.
I buy that completely. So we get an all too relevant joke about Duke wanting to ban assault rifles.
This joke about assault rifles like made me go, holy fuck. Like, it hurt to watch.
Yeah, but no politician ever fires back at the NRA with a bazooka.
And they cheer him for that.
Yes, and we get the 10,000th B'nai B'rith Award joke ever. With what is Duke reading or singing, rather?
As the kosher Kentuckian. It starts out as the first question of the four questions of Passover. And then I'm not sure if it's turning into something else or he's just mispronouncing and skipping a couple words. But it starts off as Yaman Ishtana Halayla. And yeah.
But the most important stop he makes on his campaign trail is to the zombies.
I promise you zombies, more raw human flesh than any president since Roosevelt. Doris, what are you doing here?
Looking for a husband.
And I believe is Tor Johnson in that crowd too. Yeah,
it's so perfect. I love that Tor Johnson shot. I wonder if Ed Wood hadn't come out the year previous, if they'd have had that shot in there. But it's just so awesome. Tor, go sleep now. Time for go to bed. That's the line. I fuck it up every time. I'm wearing the Mystery Science Theater shirt in this room too.
Well, you need to say it to your dog all the time,
Time for go to bed.
We get a joke that's similar to the Eudora Welty joke, where Jay calls Princess Di and talks to the Queen, and she belches just like Eudora Welty does in A Star Is Burns.
Though at this time, Diana had fled the public life and was actually suffering from a bit of a mental breakdown because of their public shame of her husband cheating on her. Quite obviously, like, in about a year, she would be divorced, and then a year after that, dead.
There's a great Prince Charles joke coming up, and I have to clip.
We'll get to that. Yeah. But also, this was a joke that felt weird to me, that Jay says two things, including longer hours for libraries. Joke structure says he should say a third thing that is a joke of, like, and free ham for everybody or something. But he doesn't say anything. There's not a third joke. Mm. It felt like there's a missing piece there.
And we are at the homecoming parade now. And, of course, it is 1995. We have to reference the Singapore caning, which comes up in two Simpsons episodes. Bart versus Australia is based on that incident.
Yep.
And I don't have the clip, but I do love, you're watching Fox. Give us 10 minutes. We'll give you an ass.
Yes. No, they rarely did that. It was ABC that was showing butts all the time on NYPD Blue.
Oh, but it's pretty fast, but I love the animation of, you know, Marty couldn't finish the whole horse statue, so he just has the butt, and he's just standing forlornly in front of it as the tractor just sort of pulls the float along, and he's just sort of like, and then the majorette sets it on fire, and apparently he jumps off because a second ago he was on the float, and now he's standing next to his dad.
Let's hear it.
Up next is the eighth graders float, built by class president Martin Sherman. The theme is a flaming horse's patoot.
Marty! Marty! Marty!
You're a hit, son.
And Marty's story is over, and now Duke can take over.
But it didn't burn down anything of value.
That's one of my favorite lines. Yes, nothing of value was
just
left.
Just the show Cats.
How long? When did Cats close?
And forever.
Now and forever?
I don't think it has closed.
I thought
it
closed.
No, I think it closed.
Oh, yeah, okay. Recently.
But it did break a record at one point for longest running.
The float thing doesn't entirely work for me because, like, I can't imagine a bunch of, like, how old is he, like, roughly middle school?
Like 11 or 12.
So. Yeah, a bunch of, like, maybe. Kids that age caring that much about a homecoming float, and yet nobody wants to work on it. And by himself, he constructed something that's, like, what, roughly 20 feet high? Where did he build that? Not in Jay's apartment.
We see them see them cutting the paper flowers. They did a lot of work on that thing.
They did. Mm-hmm. In between Jay, again, having a full-time job and writing speeches for Duke, he's also cutting flowers all the time. But this is also the same resolution as Peter Pancakes breaking the freaking roof, because the kids should hate him, but then he's like, oh, his failure makes him popular.
That's the end of every Marty story. Failing is actually twisted into something good for him, or it gets him out of the situation at least.
Though, by the way, Cats, like, look, there are worse musicals than Cats. Cats is a little treacly, and it is like you could see better musicals than Cats on Broadway pretty much any time you'd go to Broadway, but it's fine. It's fine. Yes, we all had to hear Memory too many times. Memory all up. Yes, yeah.
That's enough. That's enough.
It's an easy target when it comes to Broadway musicals, though. Yes, if you burn down Phantom of the Opera, it'd be sort of like, why? I mean, some people don't like it.
So that actor could be scarred for real.
Oh. Yes.
On Caroline in the City, there was one character, one of the characters on it worked on Cats, and it let them do a Cats joke every episode, which, surprisingly, at the time, I didn't realize how gay Caroline in the City was as a kid until then. And, like, David Hyde Pierce in an episode plays the ultimate Cats fan, which, again, should have been the big neon letters of, like, this man is gay.
Niles is gay?
It's about singing Dancing Kitty Cats, for crying out loud.
Duke would love it. Duke
Not
should be sad
pretty,
about the death of Cats.
Pretty Kitty Calico.
So, in order to increase his public image, Duke finds a new wife.
I'd like you all to meet my new wife, everybody's favorite TV mom, June Lockhart.
Miss Lockhart, why did you agree to marry Duke Phillips?
Because he agreed to bring everybody back who was lost in space, even Dr. Smith.
Mr. Phillips, what do you say to those who claim this marriage is just an outrageous publicity stunt?
I say gaze into the hypnotic power of my evil eye. Is there a follow-up question?
How may I serve you, evil one?
So June Lockhart was the mom on Lassie, which will come up later in this episode. But yeah, it's funny that he marries her. And I like that she mentions Dr. Smith, because on the Talking Simpsons episode for Fear of Flying, we played an interview clip in which someone asked her about, like, what was the deal with Dr. Smith?
And she seems pretty gay.
And she was like, it was so bizarre to have that on the show behind the rock with the little boy and everything. Like, oh, so you're saying he was a child rapist.
Yeah, he wasn't gay. He was a molester.
We could do things like that back then.
I also love Duke's Irish suck poster.
Yeah.
And that he was shocked that women vote, which that is another difference between Trump and Duke. Duke actually got the majority of white women just by a tiny percentage.
Don't look at me, man.
Well, look, as a white man, I can't cast stones at that. We also went majority for him.
That's true. So. Speaking for all white women, I say America stinks.
We'll get to that.
I am surprised that June Lockhart is still alive. 92.
Yeah. She's hanging in there.
Like, we still have that cultural touchstone from the 50s TV.
She beat Florence Henderson, R.I.P.
And I love that he actually married her. Like, she's like, yeah, I'll marry you.
A sweet old lady.
Also, I think a show I worked on is real.
And that hip, but yes, that was exactly a Hypnotoad joke. The evil eye, and then the way he said, it was the same as the winner is Hypnotoad. Oh, Hypnotoad.
Patrick Verone.
His delivery on that, too, like with the extra redneck intonation makes it sound like this is a real backwoods thing. Yes.
My evil eye gaze.
But Duke does let Jay make Goodfellas too, and it is just like the hi guy joke from the last
that
episode.
That joke makes no fucking sense. Yeah. Why would, of all films that Jay could make, he'd make Goodfellas too, which
where it says
his character.
Where it says he smells worse than a corpse.
Yes.
Like, why would he want that movie is in the movie?
In the film he imagines he's making, which also is like, he should respect Martin Scorsese and not make a sequel to his film where two of the dead characters are alive again. it's a real cheap joke. I mean, look, I love Goodfellas as much as anybody, but yeah.
And now we meet Duke's running mate.
Maybe you shouldn't enter that primary. Besides, don't you need a running mate?
Way ahead of you, chub monster. I've got just the man. He's a former ambassador, cabinet member, ex-governor of New York.
Oh, wait, now, you don't mean...
son, I'm going to be vice president, and I'm going to be honest with the American people. I'm not going to wear this toupee anymore.
Dad, you don't wear a toupee.
I will from now on.
Now that I realize they took the drink out of Franklin's hand, I miss the clinking of ice cubes in every scene he's in.
He will be holding the drink in his next scene. In
yes.
This episode,
it's a nice like little martini, though.
But just him ripping his hair off is so great.
I will from now on.
Duke is quite stupid to get Franklin. When he says cabinet member, he was the cabinet member on Balloon Doggies. He was in the cabinet.
That's right.
And he had previously been the governor of New York. But this should make it even weirder for Jay to be like, boy, you really shouldn't be working with your dad like that. But though, I guess family and the...
That's not a problem. I mean, I think it's like Stockdale all over again. It's like on paper, sounds great. If you skip over the part where he was indicted for fixing the World Series and he has bodies buried on his property, all of the other things.
And he's a mad inventor.
And anytime you actually talk to him he is insane.
And he presumably stole a monster truck and destroyed two priceless works of art.
He's the man who recently crashed through the Sistine Chapel.
He keeps saying, Nilknarf.
And there's that. And also he exposed himself on live television when his diaper fell down.
He's got a troubled past, but I think he can make it.
There's also a painful line in there where Jay says to him, like, aside from wanting to win, why are you running? Which is like, well, that's also quite a question now.
So Franklin proves his worth at the vice presidential debates where they edit in clips of Baywatch.
Yes.
Ooh, good octopus repellent.
I love the line of like, that is how it is now, though, of 18 months before the election, time for a debate. Like, that is what fucking happens.
And they recognize this is boring and will affect nothing. So let's watch Baywatch.
Though they don't pick running mates too early. It was actually a big deal. Cruz thought that was Ted Cruz's last-ditch attempt to beat Trump. He's like, you know what? I already picked my running mate now, too. It was that crazy lady.
Fiorina.
Fiorina, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's usually pretty close to the convention, little bit before the convention.
I appreciate the Republican name Rich Dullwasp.
Fucking love that joke. I love that. Yes, and that pretty much is Rand Paul.
And how Mitt Franklin inexplicably rises from the floor like,
woo! I love that.
Here is Franklin's speech.
Governor Sherman, an opening statement?
As the first black female head of the Ku Klux Klan, I'd like to say America stinks.
This may hurt us more than it helps us.
And Governor Sherman, what would you do in the case of nuclear attack?
Then you sprinkle the chicken liberally with Old Spice.
He also changes into Julia Child for a bit.
Let's call that line of the show, right?
Let's do it.
I love that the Duke's reaction is not like a spit take or horror, just like this may hurt us more than it helps us.
America stinks.
Finally, we get a movie parody. I mean, we had one at the beginning, but it's forgettable. But this is actually really good. It's Apocalypse. Wow.
Yeah.
Howdy do, I'm Colonel Kurtz. Fat and bald like old Fred Mertz. Watch me do a hula dance to shake the egg rolls from my pants.
On egg rolls.
He's not so bad, he's really just an odd man.
And I shaved my head like Dennis Rodman.
He's a god man.
Vote for Duke. Vote for Duke. Vote for Duke. Vote for Duke!
That sounds a lot like Never Had a Friend Like Me.
Yeah, it is.
Is that Maurice LaMarche singing that whole thing?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. He's doing his Brando.
So double threat, singing while doing an impression.
And he's also doing Dennis Hopper, I believe, too.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's Little Friend Like Me you're putting on the Ritz, when I think of.
Like old Fred Mertz.
God. The Dennis Hopper, I remember watching this live, and when Dennis Hopper pops up with the, he's a god man, I missed the whole rest of the episode. I was so happy.
It's a great little pop-in.
I was just laughing so hard.
So Francis Ford Coppola has done multiple musicals, including quite the fiasco, One from the Heart, which I remember reading about it in the book about 70s filmmaking, Raging Bull, Easy Riders and Raging Bulls.
Great book.
And they talk about how he was filming it all at Zoetrope, so in San Francisco where we are recording right now, but he was filming dailies on VHS so he could look at them, and he was not on the set but watching the set from afar, and he would get on the loudspeaker and say, no, do that take again, and it was just a giant mess.
Dude, I would watch that. I would watch One from the Heart 100 times before I'd watch Finian's Rainbow again.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'd go with that. Yeah, but which would you watch before Jack? Which would you watch?
Oh, probably One from the Heart, too. Yeah. No, Finian's Rainbow, legendarily. Let's film this in widescreen. Also, it stars Fred Astaire, so to be able to get his feet in the shot, he's got to be way far away over there. Also, there's a subplot about a guy turning black.
Oh, that'll happen.
And I think leprechauns. Anyway.
So Duke decides to tell the world how he really feels.
He appears live on the air, interrupting the live, but just him screaming, vote for Duke!
Vote for Duke! The final one where he's just like, vote for me! So here is Duke's speech.
I'm Duke Phillips, and from now on, I'm speaking my own mind. First, I'll tell you what I'm really going to do as president. I'll run this country like I run my company. I'm going to raid the pension fund, dump chemicals in the ocean, and sell our best assets to the Japanese.
Ooh, looks like Reaganomics is making a comeback.
Half of you states are in the toilet, and you're not coming out. New York, you know what I'm talking about. California, kiss your smoggy butt. Goodbye. New England, you're going back to old England.
No, I don't want that.
Oh, poison! I mean, tea!
Ah, don't mind if I do. You almost had me there.
Well, that's my speech. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to put on some leather and go get spanked. Vote for Duke. Good night.
That Prince Charles.
More poison! More poison!
Something they do him as a Gumby from Monty Python.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Well, I am that she's totally Terry Jones' queen.
Yes, 100%.
No, not that!
That's great. That's so great.
And I also love Napier's delivery on spanked.
Spanked.
I was like, not entirely sure about the line. But
it's just so, God damn it, that he's going to. Again, though, as we've seen, he would actually still be elected if he was in the front runner, though. Yeah. Like, nothing you say can change things.
These are more innocent times, you know?
He's telling it like it is. Mm-hmm.
You know, he is a convicted pedophile, but he's also a Republican, so I'll vote for him. That's happening right now, people.
Here's hoping by the time you listen to this, he's dropped out of the race. We can hope.
Yes.
Anyway.
This is one of three critic episodes that ends with an apology, so here it is.
Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We didn't review many movies, but tune in next week when we have Gentle Ben Maul Newt Gingrich. Good night, everybody!
Once again, Jay's pointing out the episode failed to live up to the premise of the critics.
So I have two questions.
Sure.
One, does June Lockhart just travel around with Lassie and can sick her whenever she wants?
Well, apparently she really was the mom on Lassie. Lassie actually happened, as did Lost in
all
Space.
All those were real.
Right. Yeah. So that's when she realizes, nope, Duke will be a terrible president. I'll just attack him with
his dog.
I think
she probably – it's like a summon attack. So she carries Lassie around in like a Pokeball.
And
oh, man.
On TV, they're watching Duke be mauled by Lassie. Mm-hmm.
And my second question is, does he always have the horse at the ready? I guess it's really the same question. Can people summon animals suddenly?
In the critic world, yes. Yeah. That's how a whale drops on Jay in the last episode that we saw.
He can give an impromptu speech and then say he's going to go get spanked and just jump on a horse that's there so he can ride away.
Also, they really fly by that in the real world, Duke has kidnapped an alien and enslaved him.
Oh, right.
That has happened.
And that's just a throwaway joke.
It's like, well, I did get that alien, and he is literally chained up.
He's just here to wax my floors? That's the best use I can think of for him?
Though I don't think – I get that through Jay, the producers are apologizing that they're like, well, you watched this to see funny clips, and we didn't show enough of them. But they had two really good ones.
Yeah, I kind of don't like these apology endings. Because I feel like it is a little like it's like, have more confidence. You're making a television show. Someone let this on the air.
And Duke was so funny that it worked. Like the only bad part of this episode was the Marty stuff, which just was like, you didn't need this at all.
I think that's why Dr. J is my favorite Duke episode. It's just about Duke. The Marty stuff is fine, but it just like, if you have a Duke story, that is going to overpower anything else in the episode. Mm-hmm. I think.
Because he's so amazing. Yeah. Much like how screaming vote for Duke overpowers that parody. Yes. Like, that's the presence of Duke is like, he's enough for this. Like, he's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of feel like the Marty plot should have just been a throwaway at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, this just inspires Duke to run. That's the end of it. And, like, maybe fill that time with more Franklin, because this is a really good Franklin episode.
You know what?
But he's there for, like, he has, like, three great lines.
Franklin is quite underserved.
You're so right, Michael. I thought of that as soon as you said it, that his story could resolve after he gives his speech to the school. They're like, oh, he's been elected. It's fine. That's over now. Let's move on. But instead, it kind of dwells on it.
They seem to think that horse's ass was going to be a lot funnier than it was.
I care less about the homecoming float than the kids do. I'll put it that way.
But the homecoming float.
I mean, it's a decent payoff with the flavor. Horses, patootie. Yeah. All right, good. But
if they had cut that, they'd have had time for another film parody and more Franklin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
still quite a good episode that unfortunately has more resonance today than I wish it did.
Yes, and before you yell at us, they make fun of Republicans too. So if they can do it, so can we. So thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Talking Critic. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Thank you so much for giving us money. By giving us money, you unlock shows like this and keep us happy and fed. And talking about cartoons, hopefully for the rest of our natural lives. And in case you didn't know, you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. And my other podcast is Retronauts. Every Monday, a new podcast about a classic gaming topic. Occasionally, we have bonus episodes on Friday. Go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcatcher, and you should find it. If not, I can't help you. Everybody else.
You can hear me every Friday on Vigigame Apocalypse, the weekly show about Vigigames that I host. It's at Vigigameapocalypse.com. Please don't type in Video Game Apocalypse. I don't know where that goes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Wikiparaz. That's WikiParaz.
And I also have a weekly show where we talk about pop culture from stuff 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That specific week, it's called 302010. You can see it at 302010.net. Those are the words. We keep like spelling things weird and making things hard for people. You know, it's because we want to weed out the weed from the chaff. We got to separate them out so only the finest people can find these podcasts and appreciate them fully. God damn it. We're elitists. We're liberal coastal elitists. And I'm also on Twitter at Le Ciné Nerd.
Well, my Twitter handle couldn't be more obvious. It's HENEREYG on Twitter. And you can follow me there for updates on what we're doing on the Patreon. And I thank all of you again for supporting us. And your continued support makes all this possible. And I should say it also makes possible things like our own live show, a live recording of Talking Simpsons.
Oh, dear. I'm going to be in front of people talking about cartoons. I think I'll do okay.
Yeah, and it's in San Francisco at the Piano Fight Bar, January 28th in 2018. 5:30, be there sharp.
And how much is this?
Tickets are free.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God.
And that's what we're worth. Yeah. Wait, no.
Tickets are free. I can't promise you won't have to buy alcohol or something there. But it is a free venue that is hosting us and multiple other podcasts there. We're actually the last day of SF Sketchfest, which closing out the show with a bang. It's really awesome to be at Sketchfest. I think all of us here have been to many Sketchfest shows and love them. And so being part of that is such an honor. And so please check that out. Tell your friends if you're in the Bay Area or it's easy for you to get here. You know, if you really want to spend money on a flight and come to San Francisco just for us, I won't stop.
No refunds. But,
yes, no refunds.
That's my policy. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next week with the last Real Critic episode, Dukerella. See you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.